I was thinking about James Bond not too long ago. Do you know which actor was in more of those movies than in any other? It was Desmond Llewellyn, who was in 17 of the Bond films. Do you remember which role Desmond played? If you are a true fan, you know that, on the silver screen, Desmond Llewellyn portrayed Q, the gadget guy. Another actor starred as the gadget guy in Dr. No, the very first Bond movie, but was unavailable for the second film, From Russia With Love, which was the movie in which Desmond first appeared as Q. The producers kept Desmond for most of the movies through The World Is Not Enough, his final film as Q. At one point in time, the producers were worried about the films becoming too focused on the gadgets, and so Q did not appear in one of the movies in the series. However, fans soon let the producers know how much they loved seeing Q in these movies and the gadgets he provided to James Bond, and so Q was soon back in the saddle again. Desmond Llewellyn never got rich from playing Q. He only received day rates for the time he was actually working in the films. I am not sure, but he may have made more money while he was not working in these movies, from his personal appearances, book signings, and so on. The last film he was in, The World Is Not Enough, had some very interesting and prophetic dialogue. Desmond must have known that he was probably going to be written out of the Bond franchise. Others had already come and gone. Lois Maxwell, who portrayed Miss Moneypenny for many years. Bernard Lee, who was the original M. And even several actors who had starred as James Bond had been replaced, with the most common reason appearing to be age. At the time The World Is Not Enough was being filmed, Pierce Brosnan was playing James Bond, and John Cleese was being introduced as the replacement for Q. John Cleese was denoted as R. Exactly when John Cleese would take over Q's role was unclear, but a lot of fans worried that this movie was Desmond's last. I don't know if Desmond had any say in the script for The World Is Not Enough, but here are a few of his lines from his final Bond movie. There are two things I have always tried to teach you, James. The first is never let them see you bleed, to which Bond responds. And the second, I always have an escape plan. Immediately after saying this line, Q disappears through a hatch in the floor. Maybe Q had an escape plan, metaphorically in terms of his exit from the Bond series, just as he did literally in terms of leaving the screen at the end of this scene. Desmond must have loved playing Q. He said off-screen that he was not very gadget-savvy, but that he would play Q until the producers stopped asking him to do so, or until the good Lord summoned him home, whichever came first. Desmond even developed a backstory for Q concerning Q's previous education, prior life, etc. Just to be clear about this, the character Q is never found in any of Ian Fleming's novels about James Bond. In The World Is Not Enough, it becomes clear that the relationship between Bond and Q is more like a father-son relationship. The ultra-serious Q was always frustrated by Bond's playfulness, just like any father would be when he was trying to teach his son about some important topic, and the son was more interested in having fun than in listening. Their deep friendship was obvious at this point in time. Perhaps we already knew that. Or maybe that scene just crystallized what was already in the backs of our minds and had never before become so clear. Shortly after The World Is Not Enough was completed, on his way back from what some sources say was a book signing and other sources say was simply a visit to a friend, Desmond was involved in a head-on car collision and died. I can't help but believe that he committed suicide. I believe that he was very worried that his role as Q, something that may have been the most important thing to him in his entire life, was about to be taken away from him. What did he have to live for? Roger Moore, one of those who had played Bond during Desmond's tenure as Q, spoke at the funeral. Roger Moore had also been put out to pasture, apparently due to his age. Never let them see you bleed. That's why I believe this was prophetic. I am very confident that Desmond did not want to let the filmmakers know how much he had been hurt and decided that it was not worth living anymore. Maybe that's true, and maybe that's not. Who really knows? Film producers are first and foremost business people, where the bottom line counts for more than anything else. Supposedly they wanted Desmond back for another Bond movie. If that's true, why introduce R as Q's eventual replacement? Never let them see you bleed is not an original phrase. It had been used before Q said it in The World Is Not Enough. An earlier version of it goes like this. Never let them see you sweat. It is a phrase often used by athletes. Great athletes and performers of all types need to exude confidence, no matter how much fear they have inside or how much they hurt. If an Olympic figure skater falls, he or she just gets right back up and goes on with their routine as if the fall had never occurred, no matter how much they hurt. Never let the audience or the judges see you bleed. Distance runners should never look back to see how close their competitors are. To do so is to acknowledge the fear that their competitors will catch up with them, and often that visible worry is enough to motivate competitors to come from behind and win. Runners need to be focused only on the finish line. Never let your competitors see you sweat. We've all seen football players continue on despite broken bones or other injuries. They do so that their teams can win. Never let your opponents see you bleed. Athletes who let their competitors intimidate them are said to choke and seldom win. Boxers cannot let their opponents know if and where they are hurt. To do so would be to invite their opponents to take advantage of their weaknesses. A great political orator was giving a speech at a presidential nominating convention many years ago. During this speech, he made a barely noticeable motion with his hand, brushing his head lightly. After the speech, he told reporters that one of his contact lenses was about to fall out, and that he had used that hand motion to effortlessly push the contact lens back into his eye. No one would have ever known why he had done this had he not told the reporters. He was totally focused on giving his speech and was not about to let a contact lens falling out of his eye stop him from giving a great speech. Never let them see you sweat. Poise under great pressure is essential in many areas of life. Even Mother Nature knows this. Animals attempt to hide their aches and pains. If an animal knows that another one is weak, the stronger animal may attack. Animals know they must never let other animals see them bleed. After having gone through all of these examples, I think you understand why so many people live their lives never letting anyone see them show pain or any type of human feelings. Now, let me throw you a curveball. I believe that James Bond can be compared to Jesus Christ. Don't laugh. I know that Jesus did not believe in violence, nor did he believe in womanizing. The Bible does indicate that Jesus did drink wine, although Bond appears to be a much heavier drinker. But both Bond and Christ seek to save the human race. Bond always faces satanic villains out to destroy the world, and despite all odds, he succeeds in stopping such maniacs. A long time ago, Jesus Christ saved us all. He is only scheduled for one sequel, but who knows when that will come out. There is no doubt, however, that there is a lot of difference between James Bond and Jesus Christ. The fact of the matter is, Jesus Christ is a lot different than most humans. He simply did things differently than we do. Let me give you a simple example before I give you a more complex one. On a certain occasion, some of the disciples were fishing and had caught no fish for hours. Jesus came to them. Here is my translation of that portion of the gospel. "What are y'all doing?" As if it weren't obvious. "Fishing," was the response. "Fishing? Well, where are your fish? We haven't caught any." If the disciples were married men and they had come home from a fishing trip without any fish, their wives would be very suspicious at this point. But let me continue with this story. "This must be a bad place to fish," they said. "Well, let me see." Jesus took their net and threw it from the other side of the boat. Immediately he pulled up a full load of fish, enough fish to fill their entire boat. "What were we doing wrong?" "You were fishing from the wrong side of the boat." This is powerful advice in many contexts. If you are having difficulties doing something, try doing it differently, or try doing something different. Sometimes it makes sense to try again, and sometimes it doesn't. Albert Einstein said that the definition of insanity is to keep trying to do the same thing over and over again and hoping that you will get a different result. I'll get back to this sidebar on another day, but let me return to the point I'm trying to make. Here's my second and much more complex example of Jesus doing something differently than we do. Jesus went to the cross voluntarily. Let me prove that to you. He could have stopped Judas from turning him in to the authorities. He could have run and hid instead of staying at the Garden of Gethsemane. He could have let his disciples fight when his enemies came to arrest him. And those are just a few of the mortal things he could have done. He didn't have to let his enemies arrest him. He could have killed them all if he wanted to. Instead, he healed the ear of one of those who came to arrest him and who had had it cut off by one of the disciples who was trying to protect Jesus. He could have escaped from the cross or his captors at any time. He had the power to do that. He had the power to pull out his nails and walk away. He didn't do that. He wanted to do what his Father asked him to do, and that's why he went to the cross. He stayed on the cross for us all. He went publicly and willingly to the cross. He didn't hide his pain or suffering or humiliation. Most of us have a philosophy like that of Desmond Llewellyn and Q. Never let them see you bleed. Jesus Christ did just the opposite. He might as well have said, "Watch me bleed." At the very first communion service, Jesus said, "This is my blood poured out for you." I want you to imagine someone who has had his hands nailed to a cross. That has got to hurt, and there has got to be a lot of blood gushing out. Watch me bleed. Jesus Christ did not hold back. He let the Roman soldiers directly, and just about everyone else indirectly, watch his pain and suffering. He might as well have said, "Give it your best shot. Bring it on." And then he sat back and took it all. Frank Sinatra sang, "I Did It My Way." One of the lines in the song is, "I took the blows." Frank Sinatra never suffered like Jesus Christ did. Jesus had been flogged with a whip prior to the time he was sent to the cross. There is no doubt that the flesh was ripped off his back and that he bled tremendously. Had he not died on the cross, he may well have died from infection. Watch me bleed. If you want a realistic depiction of the suffering of Jesus, see Mel Gibson's movie on Jesus Christ and watch him bleed. At least one nail went through Jesus' legs to hold him to the cross. That had to make blood spurt out of him. Watch me bleed. After several hours on the cross, the bleeding appears to have been too much for a relatively frail man, and he finally died. Never did Jesus attempt to hide his humiliation and pain. It was all out in the open for everyone to see. Watch me bleed. Jesus did this so that we might have everlasting life if we believed in him. It is very difficult to understand the theological reasons for this. The fact of the matter is, Jesus himself did not understand these reasons. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus asked God to take away this cup, meaning his ordained suffering and death if it was possible. If Jesus understood why his crucifixion was necessary, he would not have asked. Theologians tell us that a blood sacrifice of a truly innocent soul was necessary to absolve us from our sins. I don't know that I fully understand that, so I am not going to try to explain it to you. But there is a way that is simple and easy for anyone to understand all of this. Jesus was fulfilling a prophecy concerning his Father, sending messenger after messenger to the human race, only to have all of these messengers ignored. So God sent his only earthborn son, knowing that people would kill him. The fact that Jesus Christ was killed is a statement of how much God loves us and how much evil occurs when we refuse to come back to his flock. An innocent man was killed that day, a truly innocent man. It's the stuff Hollywood movies often portray. Hollywood and heaven have a lot in common, but on the other hand, so do Hollywood and hell. Watch me bleed. I want you to see a picture in your mind of Jesus Christ suffering and bleeding about 2,000 years ago. He wanted the world to know that he had suffered and died for us. He wanted us to know how much both he and his Father love us. As Jesus said, there is no greater friend than he or she who would give up their lives for a friend. Watch me bleed. Now, there are a lot of points that I could make about this, but I want you to contrast Jesus' way to how we humans approach such situations. Never let them see you bleed. There is a world of difference between that and someone who would voluntarily display his great love and his enormous agony to everyone. I told you that Jesus often did things differently than we do, and I can't think of a better example than this. There are a lot of ways that you can apply this lesson, but today I don't want to talk to you about feeding the hungry or clothing the naked or visiting those in jail. Nor do I want to talk to you about loving those who hate us. All of those things are extremely important, but I want to get back to something even more basic, because if you can't handle the basics, you won't ever have a chance of completing the more difficult tasks of a Christian life. I know a man that never said, "I love you," to his own mother during her life. He regrets that tremendously now that she's dead. I am sure she knows how he felt, but it would have been so much better for him and her if he had told her while she was still alive. It wasn't that he didn't love her. He simply was afraid to show his emotions. He simply didn't want to have her see him bleed. Tell people you care about them. Tell people you care about that you love them. Tell them as often as possible. I will bet you that they never get tired of hearing you tell them that. You never know, they might be dead before you see them again. Not long ago, a friend sent me a video. It came from a traffic light camera. It shows a well-lit intersection with good weather during the middle of what appears to be an average day. One moment, everything is normal and uneventful. Headed to the other side of the street, a pedestrian starts to proceed through the crosswalk. Then, as if from nowhere, a car runs a red light, hits another car, and then rolls right over the pedestrian. In the blink of an eye, a life was gone. It could have been anybody. It could have been you. It could have been someone you care about. The next time something like this happens, it might be to someone you love dearly. Tell them right now how much you care about them. Don't wait. You may never get another chance. You probably will see them again. But what a small price to pay, just in case you don't. I know a lady that's well into her 60s and who has been married to the same man for all of her adult life. He has never once sent her flowers. I know that he loves her deeply, but apparently this nonsense of never letting them see you bleed has gotten in the way. All too often, men are taught to be silent about their problems. When their health suffers, they frequently wait too long to seek medical attention. They cut years from their lives and lose so much precious time with their loved ones simply because of a pitiful notion about manhood. I know that we raise our children not to be crybabies, and of course there is a lot to be said about having a stiff upper lip on many occasions, but I think we have gone way too far with this. There are so many times that we should and ought to tell people that we care or that we are hurt. We need to show those dear to us that we love them. They are not mind readers. They won't really know unless we say and do things to prove it to them. We all need to communicate much better about our feelings and health problems. One day I saw a female coworker and teacher driving off after work. I waved at her. I had been giving small fuzzy teddy bears to my students that day, and I had one teddy bear left. She was just about to pass me in her car, and I handed the teddy bear to her. Immediately after receiving it, she pulled over into a parking space, got out of her car, and came running back to hug me. I held back because the president of the company we worked for was in an office and could see everything that was going on in the parking lot. The president had warned all the employees against fraternization at work long before my fellow teacher was hired. The president was worried about sexual harassment lawsuits. I could tell that my coworker did not understand and felt hurt. I will never hold back on a hug again, no matter what the consequences. I was never able to truly make this lady understand. If she hears this message someday, maybe she will understand and forgive me. Don't let that happen to you. Don't hold back on hugs and other forms of affection. It means so much to people. The other day, at a fast food restaurant, I saw a lady that wasn't that pretty. She smiled at me, but I didn't smile back. I didn't want her to get the wrong idea. But as soon as I did this, I knew it was wrong. I don't even think an apology would have done that much good at the time. It might have just made things worse. But if I had it to do over again, I would have given her a great big smile. I'm sure that is just what she needed, and I'm sure that she doesn't get as many smiles as she gives. But I hope that I didn't hurt her feelings too much, and I hope that she doesn't stop giving smiles. There will never be enough smiles to fill this world, but I wish everyone would try every single day to do just that, to fill the world with great, big smiles. There is far too much hate and suffering in this world. A smile is such an easy thing to give, and it means a lot to anyone who sees it. Being nice to people doesn't cost you a dime. Saying I love you when you really mean it doesn't cost you anything except possibly your pride. And pride doesn't have a lot of value, in case you haven't already learned that. Men aren't the only guilty ones. Women often hide their feelings and lose out on great loves, settling for so much less than they really deserve. If all we have to offer each other is this self-centered and selfish attitude and uncaring, unfeeling, emotionless, robotic notion of never let them see you bleed, If all we have to offer each other is this self-centered and selfish attitude and uncaring, unfeeling, emotionless, robotic notion of never let them see you bleed, then the world is truly not enough. We need something more, something better, something greater. We need joy in our lives. In case you don't know what that stands for, it's Jesus first, others second, and you last. Promise me, or at least promise yourself if you can't bring yourself to tell me this, promise that you will start telling those you love those three special words that they need to hear every day. Promise that you will give and receive hugs and smiles frequently and whenever appropriate. Promise that you will send those you love flowers often. And if you have any trouble making these promises or keeping them, I want you to visualize Jesus suffering on the cross. Watch him bleed, and then you go and do likewise. Jesus Christ didn't hold back on you. Don't hold back on the ones you love. Tell people you care. Show people you care. Life is way too short to play hide-and-go-seek games with your emotions. Always let everyone you care about see you bleed. It's kind of interesting to note that Jesus was seen sweating blood just before he was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane. Maybe he already knew that one day I would be telling you this. Maybe. Who am I kidding? Of course he did. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. My voice print is my signature.